Hi there, Gemma here. If you're enjoying our podcast, then please do come along and put your name down on the wait list for our Schema Circle. And that way you'll hear when we next open the doors for new members to join. The Schema Circle is really our passion project, and it's our online schema coaching membership program. There's nothing really quite like it. It's new and innovative, and we just love it. Now, there's a huge library of content waiting for you already inside. We also continue to do 3 live Q&A coaching calls every month. Now, everything is recorded, of course, and ready for you to view at your own pace. If you're looking for, a unique way to understand yourself better and to make real change, then I do invite you to come and have a look. Go to theredflagproject.com.au/SC. Now, the Schema Circle isn't therapy, but it's a great accompaniment to your own therapy journey. It's also a great resource for therapists and coaches and for anybody, men and women, wanting to know more about schemas and how we can use this fantastic model to empower ourselves to make actual changes, the changes we want in our life. Now, it's currently housed on our Red Flag website, and just click the link below to read all about it. I hope to see you inside one day. You're listening to the Good Moon Clinic podcast with Drs. Justine Corrie and Gemma Gladstone. We're 2 clinical psychologists and schema therapists with a passion for helping people get to the heart of the matter, to find out what's really going on and to help break unhelpful life patterns. In this podcast, we'll take an in-depth look at the common issues our clients bring to therapy and hope to offer you some useful new ways to think about your life and the people in it. So stay with us. We hope you enjoy this episode. Hello and welcome back, everybody, to another episode of the Good Mood Clinic podcast. This is episode number 34. My name's Gemma Gladstone, and I am here with my co-host, Justine Corrie.
Hi, everyone. It's good to be back. Had a bit of a break, haven't we? We'll blame lockdown.
Yeah, Sydney is in lockdown at the moment, which it has been for a number of...
We keep having a number of weeks. Talk about lockdown.
A number of weeks. I mean, comparatively, we have to be thankful.
Yeah.
However, it's a little bit tricky at the moment.
It is.
It's... growing cases. So we're madly, the population is scrambling to get vaccinated ASAP.
Yeah.
And so we've both been fully vaccinated, Justine, haven't we?
We're fully vaccinated.
Yep. Ready to go.
Yep. Trying to get that number up.
So to everybody who is juggling either working from home, homeschooling, hasn't that revealed itself as to be such a fascinating concept, homeschooling?
Homeschooling.
Yeah. I heard, interestingly, I was talking to one of the mothers from my daughter's school yesterday. And she was telling me yet again another story, another wonderful child story of someone who is overcoming some learning hurdles in a positive way as a result of being coached and schooled by their parents.
You mean like what? Which I'm having that experience with my son. Yeah.
Good job.
Because you can, you just get a more of an insight into how they learn and actually what they're doing. Because you have to kind of be more involved in that. And look, he's got ADHD, so that's also required a bit more organising. But yeah, it's actually been really in that way for us good, because I see where his difficulties are and I'm able to help him through them in a really targeted way. Whereas that would have been missed when he's at school, so I just wouldn't have seen the struggles in the way that I have.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
so that is one good thing.
Yes, well, that's great. And like I said, I've heard some other stories.
Yeah, cool.
To that. And then my little one, has read the whole of this beautiful book called Pearly the Park Fairy. Wendy Harmer wrote this lovely, we don't have shares in this book, we're just saying it. It's so good, Pearly the Park Fairy. Have you read it?
No.
Yeah.
Is it funny?
Anyway, I used to read, it's cute, it's about a park fairy. Anyway, she's read that whole book. Her reading has really improved out of sight since we've been home.
Because you're encouraging her to read? Like you're sort of
Oh yeah, we're just
interested in that with her.
So, good and bad.
good and bad. Well, it's just a massive disruption event, isn't it?
It's a massive disruption event.
So the good and bad of those types of things.
Kids. So last time we were looking at some, we answered a mailbox question. We're going to do the same today. We have a few. And today we're going to talk about a question that's come from somebody asking about, she's actually a therapist, asking about her clients who have had particular difficulties with their abandonment schema and friendships, negotiating difficulties in platonic friendship, platonic relationships with their abandonment schema. What comes up? And she's asking us, what do you think about that? Are there any tips? What comes to mind for you, Justine, when I say abandonment and friendships?
Comes to mind, well, the triggers can be as strong as they are in romantic relationships. They can be, particularly if this friend is very important to you. So they're an attachment figure.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a really important, special relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And so the same feelings can come up as they would in a romantic relationship, which people can find quite confusing, don't they?
Why am I having such strength of feeling, you mean?
Yeah, yeah. Like it shouldn't, you know, like a common one would be, you know, your best friend ends up going out with another friend or strikes up another friendship with a new person, and that's independent of your friendship with her. You know, that's a pretty common occurrence, but you can be feeling quite sort of bereft and alone or even a bit angry.
That's a common trigger. So if your friend or takes up a relationship or just getting to know another friend independent of you.
Yeah.
That's a big trigger I hear about all the time.
Yeah, I do too. What about me? And then though, because logically that, you know, you think, well, that shouldn't be a problem. Of course, you know, my friend, she is allowed to go off and do that. That's totally normal. You can sort of be quite judgmental about yourself, being this sort of jealous person who doesn't want your friend to be happy.
So it could trigger a sense of shame around being jealous. I feel jealous, therefore I am needy and bad, and something's wrong with me.
Something's wrong with me. Yeah, that would be a really common one.
Whereas it's really your abandonment scheme getting triggered.
But if you don't know that, very confusing.
So just like with intimate relationships, all the dynamics are going to be very similar. It's like we can get drawn to people who are ultimately not good for us. So we might have friendships that are very triggering in and of itself. So, for example, someone with an abandonment schema, whether in a romantic or platonic relationship, could find themselves attracted to someone who is quite unavailable at times, and that push-pull can happen. So you can have that with a friend as well, right? So I've had a lot of clients, particularly also if they've had if they've been quite big self-sacrifices and subjugated, so, you know, suppressing their own needs, someone else's, they've found that they've been in relationships with people who their relationship seems to be conditional upon them suppressing their own needs. And then when the person asks for a need to be met or says something, the other person can sort of end the relationship and leave the relationship.
Punish them.
Yeah. Mm. So I've had quite a few clients in that situation.
Yeah, that reminds me of people coming in for a romantic relationship issue, and let's just say there's a pattern of being attracted to narcissists in romantic relationships, and as they learn more about that, you know, how unavailable they are, how that person triggers their abandonment schema, they have this sort of waking up of actually how many people like this they have in their lives and even in their friendship groups. So they realise that all of their relationships have that dynamic in them. So they're sort of inadvertently, unconsciously chosen people who keep them very triggered, feeling not important, not listening, not special, you know, and then the self-sacrifice that goes along with that, the subjugation, which can be quite confronting.
It is, and it's slowly self-eroding, isn't it? It's very depressogenic. You're likely to get potentially depressed if your sphere of reference is dominated by that tone, then that's quite depressing. To be surrounded by people like that, where you're in that kind of dynamic with them.
And then there can be like a secondary abandonment trigger, because if you realise all these relationships are based on this dynamic and potentially that you may not be able to hang around in them, you know, as your own sense of self-respect grows and you change what you expect from people, it's like, oh my goodness, I'll be alone. I'll have no friends now because I have to kind of start again because all these people are not good for me. And I suppose you have to work out if they can change or not, if they can handle you being different, you know, once you start not self-sacrificing or subjugating, but that can also be a concern people have. I'll be alone.
Oh, that's right. And it's about learning and tuning into what defines a healthy relationship, what defines that. And sometimes if people have come, if they've been brought up in a family where perhaps one or either parent has been very narcissistic or self-absorbed, this insecure attachment because caregivers weren't reliably there to meet their needs. And if they've then developed the abandonment schema and sort of compensating with being self-sacrificing or subjugated, they don't really have, it's hard to find a healthy model for what a good, healthy relationship is. And so sometimes it's about helping people identify what it feels like to be in a healthy friendship. What are the qualities of that?
You know, it's hard for people to recognize it if they don't have that as their template of relationships.
How would you define a healthy friendship? What would be some of the emotional?
I'll think about our friendship, Gemma. We've got a very healthy friendship. Well, it's someone, there's a reciprocity in the relationship, isn't there? So you kind of feel that, you know, you can raise things that you want to talk about or get support, and then the other person can too. So there's sort of like a back and forth. There's a lack of judgment. You don't feel you have to edit yourself around the person too much. You feel they can just be yourself, not just together and got your shit together, but actually you can be vulnerable with the person, and you know that that's a safe place to be. Your friend is good at holding that emotional space for you just to feel all your feelings with them. And I think also with a really good friendship, you can do repairs, you know. So when you do have schema triggers, which, you know, all relationships have them, you can bring that up with that person and it doesn't threaten the relationship. This is something you have to work through together. If you have that with someone that's actually really special, you can work through anything then.
So the ability to do repairs, the sharing of vulnerability.
This is just the emotional, you know, obviously emotional. Fun and shared interests, et cetera, but
lack of judgment.
Lack of judgment. Yeah, that's so important.
Lack of judgment. And feeling like you can be, I suppose, for want of a better term, your true self.
Yeah, authentic.
Yeah, you can be your authentic self and you don't have to be a chameleon. You know, you always know that if you're kind of with someone who's going to be triggering your schemas around subjugation, self-sacrifice, these sort of very relational schemas, and you've got an abandonment schema, you might find that if you're with them and you feel like you have to edit yourself or you have to be a chameleon and you want to say something but you're not saying it or you don't want to do something but you're doing it, you know that this relationship needs review. You know, you need to be able to ask yourself, hang on a minute, is this a healthy relationship? Am I being really seen and heard here? Am I seeing and hearing the other person? Is there this shared understanding? Because any relationship where you feel like you have to inhibit various sides of yourself, I mean, we all inhibit parts of ourselves all the time, but I'm talking about long-term in a relationship. If you feel like you have to inhibit or be other than who you are, that is a red flag that you're in a relationship with someone who actually maybe won't tolerate you because they like to have sycophants around them, you know, like to have someone that's a doormat. So a lot of people who are very, very self-absorbed like to have friends who are doormats, or in other words, if someone's very narcissistic, they like to have a self-sacrificing, abandoned friend because they can feel in control with that friend, right? And that friend's not really getting their needs met. And the person who's narcissistic is probably not getting their needs met either because they're lacking true intimacy with a friend. So it's hard because I've had a lot of people say to me, well, how do I know? You know, how do I know I can trust this person, or how do I know this person's good for me? And so I go through that list with them, and sometimes relationships can tick a lot of those boxes, but the repair one is quite often comes up as quite hard. Do you think?
Totally. Yeah. Like if you, the thing with friendships and repairs, obviously it's just through conversation and honesty and having to tolerate a lot of uncomfortable feelings for both people.
Mm.
And you have to trust that you'll be able to have that conversation and see it through, which in a way, but it's a bit different for romantic relationships because you can, you know, you can repair in other ways that you can't in a platonic relationship.
How so? Just
make up sex, you know, you can create that physical intimacy, which is also repairing when you've had a rupture with a partner. Mm-hmm. Obviously you can't do that with a friend. So in a way, and some people find that easier than actually having these conversations that we're talking about. It can be a lot harder to actually be explicitly stating what you think and feel and having to hear back difficult things from your friend.
Yeah. So repairs with friendships can are harder, you think, or potentially
harder. Potentially harder. Yeah, definitely.
Romantic relationships.
Yeah. Don't get me wrong, they can be hard in romantic relationships too, but there isn't that shortcut to kind of repairing and making up that you have in a romantic relationship through the physical intimacy. That can be easier for people.
Yeah. So I remember when, you know, as I look back now, like relationships, friendships I had, I can think of a couple of like schema-driven friendships I had. Because friendships can have chemistry just like romantic relationships. They have that schema chemistry. So as we know, they're like, just to reiterate, that's the tendency we have to be sort of attracted to people who have the potential to wound us in the same way as our primary attachment figures do. So there's a familiarity with someone, and that's like conscious or unconscious. And when you say, yeah, and we're picking up on some sort of cues, whether it's an interpersonal or deeper, like neurobiological or something like that. We're picking up on some cues or their patterns of behaviour that are familiar, and then we stay with those people due to that familiarity, and those people are triggering and we stay with them because we're trying to get that need met of please see me, please treat me well. So you can have what would be a characteristic of schema-driven friendships, do you think? I can think of intensity as one. You meet someone, you think, oh, wow, they're, you know, I feel really, you can have that intensity in a platonic.
Like you get preoccupied with them and you tend to see them as better than you in some way, like they're sort of this idealized person.
Or you see them to the exclusion of all others. That's
yeah.
A flag.
Yeah, definitely.
The red flag. If you have a yeah. friend that you have intensity with them and you don't understand that intensity and you tend to see them to the exclusion of all others, I'd be very wary of that. Be very mindful of that.
When you're going to catch up with them or speak to them, there can be a mixture of, like, you can feel a little bit anxious because you're not sure necessarily how that's going to go if they're a bit unpredictable, you know. So you think, oh, okay, you know, you're a bit wary, mm-hmm. even though you're agreed to it and they're your friend, you know that they can turn on you or they may not be there for you in the way that you need. So you're already a bit braced for that. I hear that from clients quite a bit. But you have to tune into yourself.
Quite a long time ago, I'm thinking of a couple of people who dealt with, they clearly had big abandonment schemas, and I'd done something where I didn't, you know, come up to scratch. So I must have let them down in some way. And that led to complete cut off to people. And I mean 100% cut off. This is when I, in my...
They've just disappeared.
Yeah, just cut off, like... And I, for one of them, I didn't really know what I even did.
And you found out?
No. And the second one I did find out. And it was there's a third person. I'm putting a third.
It's a pattern.
Because it's so many, a lot of us have got abandonment, you know, schemas. But I remember that because I didn't, it had the flavour of not self-sacrificing. It had the flavour of me putting a little bit of, I mean, I'm talking a mild boundary, nothing big. So one was a disappointment. I think maybe I couldn't come somewhere or do something. I couldn't show up. And two other had to do with me laying down some sort of boundary, saying no to something. And three instances led to a breakaway and a cut off. So that's how some people with an abandonment schema cope in friendships when they don't feel their needs are getting met and they feel like their friend has really wounded them. Even though what the friend has done is actually not huge, you know, but they've coped by cut off. That's a common coping strategy in friendships when the abandonment schema is at play. where people just go, you know what, no, forget it.
Because they can't have the repair conversation. They can't actually express what they're experiencing. Now you say that, I had a friendship like that, which was really sad. You know, we kids were friends and it was a really great friendship. And I suppose this illustrates how sometimes these triggers may not happen until quite into the friendship. You know, so you think it's quite a good situation, you know, and you think there's like it kind of works, and then something changes and could be outside of your control, like it was in my case. I just couldn't spend as much time with her. I had my thesis and we actually ended up living further away from each other than we had before, so it was just harder to catch up. And that was experienced by her clearly as some, you know, rupture that felt really terrible for her. But unfortunately, she couldn't do the repair with me. Like, you know, I think this is also the problem. So even if you're trying to be effective and talk about it, the person can't always reciprocate.
Did you try to talk about it?
Yeah. On about three occasions. And, you know, because I was really sad because we'd had so much fun, and it was just obviously for her, she was overwhelmed and probably couldn't make sense of it in the way that I could, you know. And obviously you don't want to be trying not to go into therapist night, just trying to have authentic, genuine conversations. And that was just not something she could participate in at that point. And so, yeah, it's just never recovered, and she cut me off. But it was a shift. Like, I suppose prior to that, we'd been pretty, you know, we'd been able to see each other quite easily. Like, our things were aligned. It just naturally flowed. But then just as moving away and then me just, you know, it's the last 2 years of my PhD. So obviously I had to spend more time doing that. Mm-hmm. That was experienced by her as me abandoning her.
Yeah, relationships can be hard work, and they require, yeah, investment. Actually, this is probably a good time to interrupt this segment for a break to hear from our sponsors, which are, in fact, us.
Are you a woman currently going through a breakup? Is the pain of the breakup interfering with your ability to live your best life? If this is you, then you'll want to get a copy of Justine and Gemma's Breakup Guide. The Red Flag Project Breakup Guide will provide you with the practical advice and psychological support you'll need as you navigate the emotional ups and downs of a breakup. Taking care of yourself and your future self will be much easier with the support you'll get from this step-by-step companion resource. You'll find a link in the show notes, which will take you straight to the Breakup Guide for more information. Or you can go to goodmoodclinic.com.au/RFP-BUG. That's goodmoodclinic.com.au/RFP-BUG.
Hi, I'm Dr. Gemma Gladstone, clinical psychologist and certified schema therapist. You know, working with Justine Corrie over the years in clinical practice, we have had the fortunate experience of working with hundreds of women and being able to help them work through a particular issue. These women have struggled to identify early warning signs when dating and entering new relationships with men. But if they've been able to spot certain signs earlier and make decisions, say, not to pursue a guy or to end something early, then they would have actually saved themselves precious months of heartache and potentially years of precious time. So we developed the Red Flag Project, an online course for these types of women. So who exactly is it for? Well, this course is for women with a pattern of getting involved with, say, emotionally unavailable men, including those subgroup of men who become controlling, possessive, and harmful down the track. This course is really for any woman trying to navigate the dating world and wanting guidance on how to not waste time with dates who are unavailable, inconsistent, avoidant, detached, narcissistic, or controlling for whatever reason. So if you have difficulty setting healthy boundaries and you find it really difficult or hard to read the signs to trust your judgment and to judge the behavior of a date or your partner early in a relationship, then you will definitely benefit from this course. You know, many of our clients with this pattern have literally found themselves embroiled with these types of men over and over again. Now, we know this, and we know this at a heartfelt level because both of us had this pattern and we lived through the frustration and the hopelessness associated with it. And we used schema therapy and our own healing to overcome it. So we've chosen to focus on women for this particular course simply because we've worked with so many of you. So many women hugely affected by this issue, and we want to make a difference in the trajectory of the lives of these women. A preventative difference, a real preventative difference in the lives of these women who, by their own self-disclosure, identify with this pattern. So check it out. It's called the Red Flag Project, and go to our website, goodmood.com.au. Yeah, so coming back to friendships and abandonment, it's such a big topic. I remember getting triggered a few times in our relationship, Justine.
Mm-hmm. Yes, we've had a few difficult times and repairs, haven't we?
Yeah. I remember earlier on in my journey of healing my own abandonment schema, the things that would trigger me, not just necessarily with you, but with other people, were even just very mild. Sometimes, I'm talking about little baby triggers, right? But nevertheless, a trigger where there was a difference of opinion, you know, like a difference of, I remember years ago, so, oh, this is going back about, this must be going back about 15 years ago or something. And I remember getting off the, it's funny how these memories stick in your brain, isn't it? Astonishing. I remember getting off the phone from you and we were having some sort of debate about something to do with mental health. I can't remember what it was now. Anyway, we disagreed.
15 years ago, yeah.
We disagreed on this topic.
Mm-hmm.
I remember getting off the phone feeling a bit flat, and then I tuned in to what was going on and I realized that it felt like a severage or a separation.
So we weren't aligned fully,
yes,
on something.
Yeah. Not that, you know, you have to be fully aligned, of course, but nevertheless, it was a trigger. It's an example of how we can have abandonment issues, and the trigger can be pretty small, but sometimes it's got to do with anything that represents a difference or a separation. If you have very big reactions to those kinds of things, it's really about that little abandoned child getting really stirred up. Wouldn't you agree?
I'm just thinking, so in that one, did you, look, I can't remember that, obviously, that's lost in the midst of time for me, but did you talk to me about that or did you just manage that in yourself? Because sometimes that's a good distinguishing factor, isn't it? So when you should raise something and when you have to say, okay, well, this is actually just my internal schema being triggered. And
I think there was a lot of other things going on as well. So I think I might have just taken a Mesindol and gone to bed.
Yeah.
No, look, I do remember that. I do remember that I clocked it,
yeah,
as being a trigger that was internal for me. And I remember intentionally saying to myself, hey, disagreements are disagreements. It was not an argument. It was simply a strongly stated, like, no, I don't agree. I agree here, or I think this, or I think that. So I remember that triggered me a little bit. So I had to do some of my own kind of little bit self-soothing. Mm. It, depending on the extent of the trigger and depending on the quality of the relationship, sometimes you can bring it up and talk to your friend about it, or sometimes you can just sit with it and wait for the intensity to go away and do check in with yourself, really.
And then see how it feels.
Yeah, particularly if you've done some work on your abandonment schema, you go inward and say, hey, look, I know who's being triggered here. This is, you know, little me is being triggered.
Mm.
The abandoned part, and you can do your own little bit of soothing and just reassure that part of you that healthy relationships go through phases and cycles where there's distance and where there's connection. And that doesn't mean the relationship is getting threatened. In fact, the ability to resolve differences or share difference of opinions without people getting angry is a key quality of a good relationship.
Because that's been authentic, isn't it?
Yeah. And that's what we want. We don't want our friends to subjugate or suppress themselves when we're talking to each other. So I think it's always when we're triggered, it's usually a disproportionate reaction. So there'll be something that happened and then we'll get dysregulated or we'll get really churned up about something and our reaction seems to be bigger than what would normally be warranted if you didn't have the schema. So that's how you can tell that you're being triggered. And then that's when you need to sort of have a bit of a check-in with yourself and figure out what's going on. What am I actually really responding to? And this is where a lot of conflicts occur because we don't, there's so much unspoken stuff sometimes in relationships. Now, the problem is just say there's a big, so what about the example where there might be a bigger thing?
It's like a pattern over time that keeps repeating or something. Like it's to say, you know, your friend doesn't listen or moves conversations on when you're talking, like, and that becomes a pattern over time.
Well, that would be a tricky one. How would you respond to that? Do you think well, that's interesting because if you had a friendship where your friend was always doing that, then what's the quality of that friendship?
Yeah, and I suppose that's what you have to find out because, you know, we all have schemas. And so if you just let that roll on, obviously you'll get resentful and the other person may be oblivious, right? Whereas if you raise it with that person, oh, hey, I just noticed, you know, when I'm talking and I really value your guidance and support, sometimes it ends too quickly. I've still got more to say. Do you mind if I point that out to you and we can keep talking a bit? You know, so you would say something like that if they can't tolerate that, because that's quite it's a very sort of reasonable thing to point out. Someone who's flexible will go, oh my God, sorry, I didn't realize I did that. But you're right. You know what I do? I probably do. You know, like they would be able to self-reflect and validate your experience at some level and they'd want to make an effort to improve. But if they can't, obviously that gives you information about that person's capacity.
So it's worth trying is what you're saying.
Yeah, and that's how you clarity comes through action. You know, like you won't necessarily get the information you need to make a decision on these relationships until you actually test certain things out.
That reminds me as you were talking, actually the way you just modeled that I thought was very good. I was smiling to myself thinking, yeah, people need to probably hear that a little again. But that reminds me of that gaslighting role play that we did.
Oh, yeah.
When we did the one about the narcissistic mother, the ability for other people to hear us when perhaps we're not saying something, when inherent in what we're saying is a little bit of a criticism.
It is hard to sort of hear sort of negative feedback about yourself. Like no one likes that. You know, we all feel a bit of shame and human beings, we don't like feeling shame. So we want to jump out of it with blame or defense, but that's not the case for everyone. And if you can phrase it as just a sort of a caring, loving complaint that you're expressing because you really want the relationship to improve, a good friend will be able to hear it even though they're uncomfortable and want to make it better because you're important to them too.
Sometimes when you raise things like that with people, they may not get angry, but they may just want to avoid, you know, the avoiders.
Yeah.
Just don't want to go there. Like, no, everything's fine.
Yeah, true. And then, but you know, it's not. You can sense the misattunement still. Mm. It's them just protecting themselves and wanting to smooth it all over.
And they don't want to go there or have a deeper, meaningful conversation with you because that's just unsettling.
I suppose sometimes like friendships aren't black and white, are they? Like you have people who are in your inner sanctum, if you like. So you're in my inner sanctum, Gemma. So they're people who you know, as we were saying before, you can be fully authentic with and you can have conversations with and, you know, and then you've got friends who perhaps, you know, may not be able to have, you can't fully have that same experience with them, but they're still good people to have in your life for other reasons. You might share something in common but you kind of know that that's their limitation. And so you wouldn't necessarily take the vulnerable parts of you to that relationship.
Yeah.
Once you learn that. And that's the shades of grey that you need to develop, which is sometimes hard to do if you've got that abandonment schema because you tend to see everything in quite a black and white way. They're either with me or they're not with me.
Which is at the heart of that trigger I was describing.
Yeah.
And, you know, you're either with me or you're against me, kind of, or with or not with me. Whereas, yeah, it's a good point about the shades of grey.
But, well, I can't do that. I can't talk about those things with her because she's not malignant or anything, but she just can't handle that for her own reasons, her own schemas. And, you know, I can see that. But we still have a great time in these other ways. So I'll just accept that. And
that's a very healthy adult view of relationships.
Yeah.
And I think moving away from the black and white, all or nothing frame of reference for relationships is very important. To be say, okay, well, who is in my inner sanctum, as you say? You know, who are the people that I can be very authentic with and real, and I don't have to edit myself really, or I don't have to, you know, I don't feel judged. And then who are the other people just outside that circle and then beyond? And then you can, you know, sometimes it's quite useful to just write those names of these people down or do little circles and say, okay, well, this is someone that I have some fun with, or this is someone I catch up with and we do this, but I wouldn't be able to sort of have a deeper conversation with them and have all different levels of friendships. And one person also can't meet, well, all our needs in that respect.
Yeah. But that's what your abandoned child inside you wants. That's right. The unmet need.
That's right. And the mirror is we're trying to replicate that because as kids, you know, little ones, one parent is supposed to meet all our needs.
That's right.
That being our primary caregiver, it is black and white. So it's kind of really interesting. We think about relationships and schemas. They play out just as they would in intimate relationships or, you know, romantic relationships.
Yeah, totally.
What else comes to mind? Can you think of anything?
Well, I was just thinking about the word ambiguity, which is another way of thinking about the shades of grey, so that, you know, if you have an abandonment schema, tolerating ambiguity in relationships is hard, right? So if that person isn't completely aligned with you or they're not giving you sort of unambiguous feedback that they're there for you and they're not going to leave, having to sit with people not always being there in the way you like is difficult. But if you can label that and just know that about yourself, then you can start seeing these triggers when things are ambiguous in a different way and not so catastrophically.
That's a good point. That's got me thinking about, it's kind of overlapping with this idea of while we've got to be aware of what makes a good relationship, and we don't want to, you know, subjugate ourselves and we don't want to hide ourselves in relationships. We've also got to understand that people are just people, you know, people are people and people are going to make mistakes and we all make mistakes and we all at times miss things. And interpersonally, and we miss things like as parents, we miss things, and partners, we miss things, and friends, we miss things. So we may not always see what our friend needs in the moment. There might be some misattunement, but that
just
doesn't
so
mean
common.
Failed them. And same with us, like we may feel unheard or unseen, but we have to take the relationship on balance and ask ourselves the question, by and large, has this person been there for me? Large, have they seen me? Have they been there? Are they interested in me? Do they give me time? And all of those things, by and large, are they there for me? And if the answer is yes, we have to be moderate. So sometimes we have to kind of like drop in a good way our expectations of other people. But some schemas, they make us have, if there's relational, where they make us have very high expectations of people, and then when you don't meet those expectations, you feel like, you know, that person's really hurt you.
So not being, as I said, yeah, so catastrophic and black and white, and then just accepting when you're talking, I was thinking of Terry Real. So he's sort of a psychotherapist who deals a lot with men, and he was talking about in the podcast I was listening to the cycle of relationships, which is, you know, connection, rupture and repair, connection, rupture and repair, and that's actually normal. People just think, you know, if it was a great relationship, there'd be no conflict or misattunements or ruptures, but actually that's very normal. It's just that if you have an abandonment schema on board, you haven't been taught through your parents to handle the ruptures and repairs. It's sort of something you haven't learned yet. You can, and actually relationships as adults, you know, if you've got this insight and knowledge and you're doing the self-development, can be very healing, because then you can actually feel even more secure in relationships because you can accept that cycle and know I'm not helpless if someone, if there's a rupture, I can actually do something about it. There's hope. You can repair and connect again.
Would you recommend that book?
It was a podcast I was listening to, but we'll put the link in the show notes to that because it's actually really good. Yeah. It's all about shame as well, which, you know, that's a very good thing to get your head around in general. Yeah. So if you're an abandonment schemer, you usually have a lot of shame on board too, lots of feeling defective. So, yeah, I'll put that link in the show notes. But that stood out to me. I thought, wow, because that just normalizes the whole thing. Because if you've got an abandonment schemer, you don't come into adulthood having learned the normality of that.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people, regardless of even whether they've got an abandonment schemer, would fall into that category of finding that very difficult because it's a mature thing that you come to learn, isn't it? That it's also so important for children.
Oh, the power of sorry, making good.
Like. Yeah, that we try to, you know, do those repairs with children, not leave them alone with big emotions or leave them alone feeling like they're to blame or that they have to figure out the solution all by themselves.
Yeah.
I think we've shared today a lot of the triggers that can come up when you have an abandonment schema in relation to friendships. What would be the biggest takeaway, do you think, in terms of what people can do if they're really identifying with this?
Well, I think obviously explore your schemas, you know, and actually learn how you're triggered in relationships and start taking responsibility for that, because that gives you a whole different way forward. Mm. Then you're not helpless in the feelings and just thinking, oh, well, that relationship's dust, because it may or may not be, you know, and learning sort of how to do repairs and have those difficult conversations if you're somebody who finds that hard. Mm-hmm. It's a very empowering thing to do, even though it's uncomfortable.
And tuning into noticing when you're triggered to be able to have that kind of regulation in yourself where you say, yes, I'm triggered here. Wow. And having curiosity about that trigger, you know, that I've been triggered here. I feel like this. It makes me feel like pulling away from my friend or punishing my friend or whatever the urge is that you have, cutting off from your friend. And then realizing that that's the abandoned part of you that is feeling that way. And that's when you have to bring in the healthy adult and say, hang on a minute, however, let's review this relationship and see whether this on balance, this relationship is a good one, good enough one. And so you don't do anything rash by ending the relationship or doing something very damaging to the relationship. So really tuning in and treating that triggered embodied response that you can have that can be very uncomfortable and you can be really activated, seeing that as your little abandoned self within and doing some soothing around it and just naming it, labeling it, right? Naming it to get a better hold on it.
Yeah, you're dealing with.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, well, that was a really interesting discussion on friendships and
Gemma and I were saying maybe this will be like a short podcast because, you know, there you go, we found lots to talk about.
There's always more to say, isn't there? So so if you want to get in contact with us, you know, Justine and Gemma at goodmood.com.au, and we'll have those links in the show notes that Justine mentioned. And also don't forget, you know, if you don't know much about the abandonment schema and you really resonated with this stuff, get yourself a copy of Reinventing Your Life, which we'll have the link to, and make sure you read that, and particularly the chapter on abandonment. It is a really good chapter and explains things really, really well.
And I'll just flag that Gemma and I are going to be creating a course on abandonment. So sort of learning to identify and cope with your abandonment schema. So you can go on the waitlist for that at our website, www.goodmood.com.au, and go to the Learning Hub. And you can put your name down there and we'll let you know when it's done.
And if you are dating or thinking about getting back into dating and you're a woman and in the past you've had relationships with unavailable partners, then also check out the Red Flag Project, which is our short e-course for women with an abandonment schema who have this pattern in relationships of attracting unavailable partners. So, yeah, and that's just go to goodmood.com.au. So we will, it's been great chatting about this topic, Justine.
As always.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you for sharing, and I will see you next time.
See you next time.
Bye.
Bye.
Well, that's it for today. We really enjoyed spending time with you, and we hope that you keep listening. You can visit the podcast page on our website, goodmood.com.au, for more information and to access show notes. Please remember that this podcast is intended for information and learning purposes, and that it shouldn't be used as a substitute for personal therapy. So, please consult a qualified mental health professional for assistance that is tailored to your specific needs. Hope you stay well and take great care of yourself. Bye for now.